Hello everybody, this is Elisabetta speaking. Welcome to the fifth episode of She at Work. Today I have the pleasure to speak to Olivia Verhoes, who's worked most of their career in auditing, risk and control, but in the past few years has taken an interesting turn. Welcome, Olivia.
Thank you for having me. Pleasure.
So, Olivia, let's start by saying how we met each other. We were colleagues when we were both working at the European Commission here in Seville until recently. So let's start with a short introduction. What was your career like until now?
Okay, well, you want to tell about my story? I used to start with once upon a time. So I'm Belgian, living in South Spain for 15 years now. I was raised in a family retail business, and I started studying business and administration. Worked for Deloitte, and then for Citibank, so as an auditor, and then worked in various countries, and about 15 years back I took a sabbatical, follow my better half, and had the opportunity to work in Sevilla and work with you, Elisabetta, at the European Commission there. And when my contract ended, I eventually decided to do something that I've always had done, be a mentor. When I decided to professionalize it, I started, as I said, going to get my certification and so on. And that's what I've been doing recently. But I realized, on the other hand, that whenever I was talking about audit and control, that I always kept an eye on, I was blah, 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 blah. So recently I decided to maybe go back to consulting at the same time as I'm a mentor. So here I am.
Right. So one thing I find a bit weird is that auditors actually have a bad reputation. But ever since I know you, I thought you were quite nice.
Thank you.
How could you reconcile these two things? Well, I'm being a bit provocative here, actually.
Of course.
I guess you get the question.
Well, and you're not the first one who tells me that. I mean, yes, I'm the way I am. Nevertheless, I'm serious with my job. I mean, you know, and you're not the first one who tells me, you sure you're an auditor? So there you go. Thing is, you know, whatever you do, if you do, you like what you do, that's what's important. And an audit is not as bad as people say. And that's actually one of my my joy when I can tell the people and show them another face of auditing, and tell them it's not what it used to, the usual reputation it is there. So there you go. Hopefully today I will be able to convince people and young girls that it may be something quite interesting, even creative and innovative.
That's interesting. So let's start chronologically.
Okay.
How did you get into auditing? Did you choose it, or did auditing choose you?
Well, I guess it's a little bit of both. I guess I studied business administration, and actually after failing in a school in Belgium, kind of the Belgian hard part, I eventually went into a private business administration school, and there actually we had a lot of audit in the subject that we had, and it just liked it. And in those years, the companies were interviewing students before they were we had ended our study. So I got hired at Deloitte for the end of the academical year, and that's how I started in auditing. And I have to say, it was really like I was like a fish in water, like as we say in French. There you go. Whenever I was ready to go further, I thought, okay, I've been 4 years now in audit. Maybe it's time to go and see somewhere else. There you go. I had an opportunity to enter internal audit at Citibank, where I did most of my career, traveling in Europe, doing financial and operational audit, but also project audit. And then eventually I had the opportunity to work in New York at the beginning of the 2000, when it was like big internet bubble. So that was just an amazing experience. I had the opportunity to work in New York from 2000 to 2003. And when I came back, because I had an opportunity to come back to Belgium as an internal control and audit head, where I go, I met my husband. And after a few years there, I had the opportunity to go and follow him to Sevilla, working for the commission, and there you go. Now, the audit is fun, or can be fun, if you think about what it is.
May I ask one question before we move forward? What's the difference between audit and control?
Okay, well, there is a difference. Control is just a measure. I mean, or just it's a measure to obtain to get to your objective. Audit is more like a function, in general speaking. The role of audit is to give an opinion on a situation, on a financial or operational situation. And generally, an auditor gives an opinion about the control environment, so the quality of the control environment. Now, make sure that an environment, a business environment, is controlled, you have specific measures that helps you meeting your objective. One of the things, how it's materialized, is by policies and procedures. You are an economist, you know what modelization is. Well, a procedure is a modelization of a certain situation. Management thought, okay, this is how things should go, and this is how people should do their work. And an auditor will pick, okay, did it or they didn't. Now, if a procedure or policy is not followed, there are two options. Either they're not doing their job, or the policy or procedure is not properly conceived.
It revolves around procedures. And again, procedures have a bad reputation. I'm being a bit provocative. But for what you say, procedures are necessary. And as you said, it could be a bad procedure. It's not that the procedure is boring. It's just trying to do something that is wrong.
Exactly. It's a modelization to help you, just making sure that you reach your objective as a business manager. So the thing is, if a procedure is well done, it has to have a deviation process, making sure that it's...
Olivia, one second. I lost you for 30 seconds. Can you repeat?
Yeah, thank you. A procedure, as I said, is a modelization that we explain. And a procedure always, or a policy, always should have a piece to handle deviation. As I said earlier...
To handle what?
Deviations or exceptions. Because as I said, if there are many exceptions, you have two options. Either people are not doing their job properly, or the procedure, the policy is not properly conceived. And it's very important for management to have the information, because if there are many exceptions, it may mean that you need to change it so that it's... So that's why also it's important to understand what's behind.
And when a procedure, so the signal as an auditor or as a controller, the signal that indicates that actually the procedure may be wrong is when there are lots of exceptions. So if you see a lot of exceptions, your reaction is not, oh, these people are not doing their job. Your reaction is, there's something wrong in how we are measuring what they're doing.
It can be both. It can be both. You have to go further. This is why it's important that people get the general context as well to properly handle it. But it's never one who's only white and the other who's only black. You have to have the bigger perspective. And it's important to understand what's behind. As a compliance officer, I used to say, you're not in compliance. Okay, no problem. Let's see. Let's see what's the real risk that you're exposed to. And what are you doing to manage that risk? Because that's what controls are used for. If you do the right thing, and on the top of that, you formalize that and you get the approval of your management, you know what? Back in compliance. That's what the exception and deviation process is about. You know, there is no decision can be made on that information. So it's linked.
So I think, like, for you, auditing is a lot, and auditing and control, because you talk about these things as a one. A lot of it is about wanting to find an order, you know, wanting to systematize what's happening. Where does that come from?
Well, actually, when we talked about it, I kind of remember that as a little kid, growing in my parents' store, it's true that I remember I was already writing procedures. I didn't know that's what I was doing. I recall that the other day. So I guess, writing procedure is also a way to transmit knowledge, transmit and to share best practice. So this is something that's important in it to that extent. So I guess, yes, it's how I eventually later fit very naturally in the audit environment, because it's something that I was like naturally inclined to.
I like this observation that actually, procedures are a way to crystallize knowledge. If you have a system that ensures that the procedure is well done, so if you have a system that creates good procedures, is a system that knows itself and that knows how to reproduce itself and correct itself and evolve.
Exactly. I talked about modelization, talking about a perfect situation, and best practice also are oriented to the situation possible. That's what it's about.
And what did you like about this work? No, on the one hand, that's okay, the intellectual process of putting things in order.
What I like to do is to help people. I mean, I'm a woman, I'm a carer. So as an auditor, I help them understanding better what they do. You know, when you have another perspective, it helps you to better understand what you do. As I said, best practice is something very important to transmit. There you go. And variety of the job. I mean, as an auditor, you have the opportunity, be an external auditor or an internal auditor, to have such a variety of business, industry, operations, people, countries, you just name it. So that was for me one of the big really things that attracted me and that kept me in the profession.
So in true auditing, you get to see a lot of parts of business.
Absolutely. In French, I remember saying la voie royale. We talked about la voie royale, the royal pass to any company entering in audit is giving you the best overview of it.
Okay. And throughout the years, how did you see things evolving in auditing? So how does auditing change over time? Because, technology is changing, businesses are changing. So how do you see history unfolding through the eyes of auditing?
Well, yes, things are changing, but in the essence, it's still the same, you know. What we do is the same, and that is true for other professions. Now, technology around is evolving. I mean, I used to work with a piece of paper and a pencil, you know, and then we had computers that were not portable, they were pushable, as a colleague of mine used to say. Technology helps to do sometimes a better job, yes, because you have techniques that allows you to do faster things, but the essence intellectually it has not changed. It's the same pretty much. As I said, it's a process of understanding what you do, on analyzing phase, establishing things, and then monitoring them, testing them, and then you have a better understanding. It's, you know, like in it, it's a continuous improvement process.
And throughout your career, I mean, you've achieved quite significant milestones in your career. You ended up being a director of control.
Internal audit and control, yes, I had a department under my responsibility.
In what is, I mean, as typically not a particularly feminine environment. How was that? And what was the role of mentoring throughout your process?
Okay. Most business world are usually men dominated, that's for sure. I was lucky when I was in the board of or the management committee of Citibank Belgium. We had a decent proportion of women. If I recall, we were 6 or 7 out of 17, which is not bad. And I'm talking 15 years back, 20 years back, actually, 20 years back, pretty much. So there you go. And audit is a profession, maybe also for women, to the extent that we are not as keen as defending P&L and so on. An audit position is a little bit more like, you know, you have to do what you have to do outside of the politics. We stay, you know, clean, so to speak. So maybe that's a reason why, you know, you can find a lot of women. Also, another reason is because women, when they do something, they go until the end, and this is a quality that's quite important in auditing as well.
Okay. And then, so you, we're moving now to your next stage career wise. So you decided to become a mentor and to become a certified mentor and to do this properly.
Yeah.
What did other mentors, uncertified, informal, what did they do for you? Why did you choose to branch out in this direction?
I didn't have a mentor. It's just that I realized that was naturally mentoring people. I mean, in the beginning, I didn't know that's what I was doing, but I talked about transferring knowledge earlier. Well, a mentor is someone who shares more than knowledge and perspective. So, I mean, any manager somehow is mentoring. I mean, the definition
they should.
yeah, that's what we expect. It's what we expect. So the definition I have of mentoring right now is inspired by two gurus of the profession, David Gutenberg and Kirsten Poulsen. It's an alliance of mutual trust, development, and learning between someone who's supposedly more experienced and ready to share more than knowledge, perspective, and so on, with someone who's supposedly less experienced, who's seeking personal and professional development. So there you go. When I decided to dedicate myself to that, so yes, I decided to professionalize my practice and get the certified, which I am with the Urban Mentoring and Control Mentoring and Coaching Council. So now I'm on the control line, and it's great because it's a very professional community, it's really very rewarding, because mentoring is really a two-way road. As a mentor, you pretty much learn as much as you mentee. It's one of the things I enjoy in that part of it.
And so you said you didn't have any informal mentor either in your career, or people who you would turn to for suggestions?
Not that I would think of like that. And I guess this is one of the motivation I have as a mentor. As a professional woman, for me, it's very important to send the elevator back. I mean, as a person, I'm someone who's very much moving forward. But here, giving back. This is my my motivation. Professional women don't behave, don't work the same way as men. So we don't network the same way. So we have to help each other, and mentoring is for me a way to give back. My elevator speech is make a difference for professional women. As a mentor, I connect, inspire, support, enable them by leveraging my 20 plus year experience as a recognized professional, delivering constructive support with a smile.
And what do you think women need most mentoring for, based on your experience?
Well, we are victims of many things. I mean, sometimes I say every day I'm more of a feminist, because even though we have more opportunity than in the past, we have not learned about, we have not been taught about taking those opportunities. And the classic disease we can find for women is imposter syndrome, disease to please. I mean, we care. And so as a mentor, it's very important for me to, I keep saying, get out of your, of you as a person, as a woman, get you out of your closet to please. Allow yourself to be your best version. This is really what I do. And actually, people keep saying that I make simple what looks complicated. And that's what really I seem to be doing when I enable people to make it happen their way. And professional women specifically.
And where did you gain all that, let's say, all this awareness? I mean, you mentioned that throughout your corporate career, so the board of directors had quite a lot of quite high female presence. Mm-hmm. So what did you feel then? You were I don't know if you felt anything was lacking, and that made you want to be a mentor.
Well, at that stage, I was not having in mind the idea of becoming a mentor. I was feeling lucky as an auditor, because my business manager once came to my office and asking me, just think we should do this and this and this. And I said, well, yes, Jose, absolutely. And then it was a little man, very quiet. And then I got out of my office looking at him. Gosh, normally audit director has to pray and implore the director to have that, and he's coming to me. That was at the time, so I was lucky. But it was not really a mentor. But now, I didn't have a mentor, and as I said, I think it's something we should all have the opportunity. And luckily, it's something that becomes more known, and you should have more than mentor either same time or along your life and so on. It's something that's really a very interesting experience on both sides.
And now, as we're close to running out of time, I want to get to stage three of your process. You want to get back into auditing and control, but having an experience, a luggage in mentoring. What happens next? What's your plan now?
I don't want to go back to auditing as such, more as going back to consulting to some extent. So I realize, one, I'm kind of missing it, and I realize also I haven't lost things. As I said, the technology may have changed, but in essence, I know, and I have.
Can you repeat? I lost you.
Yes, and I said, it's not auditing I want to go back. I want to go back to consulting. So and consulting about enterprise risk management, I mean, it's all the same concept. And having been always connected with my former profession, I have realized that I haven't lost, you know, the essence. The technology may have changed a little, yes, but not that much. And what I realize is that being now a certified mentor makes me a better consultant, because I have acquired and a posture as a mentor that helps me understanding, listening better to my client. And as I said once again, it helps me making happen their way when I enable them. So there you go.
So Olivia, you are now launching your new business. So you're planning to go back in consulting. Who are your clients? Who would you like to work with?
Well, of course, if I target specifically a businesswoman and a female executive, that would be just great. But I mean, the business world is still full of men, and I have no problem of helping other businesses that are not led by women. And hopefully, I will be able to convince them and make them coming to an awareness level that they need women, obviously. But the idea is raise the awareness level. Actually, it's a little bit similar to diversity. We need to help organizations to improve their culture. You know, culture is about diversity. The culture is about risk awareness as well, in similar ways. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Right. So I think we're getting close to the end of this recording. Before thanking you very much, I want to say the three things that I take home. First of all, I really like our discussion about the role of auditing and control and breaking through the stereotypes. I like this idea of looking at procedures as models that work or not work. And then I like this idea of combining that experience with mentoring and reinventing yourself after many years of giving yourself a different chance. So thank you very much for that. Do you want to conclude with anything?
No, my pleasure. It was really nice to have a chat and get back with you. And hopefully, I've been able. Some people say I'm a positive energy radiator. Hopefully, I have been able to convince those who will listen and see this that yes, audit is a very interesting career. And it's as a general conclusion, don't just stick to what it looks. Sometimes it's quite worth going a little further and just enjoy.
Okay, thank you very much, Olivia. This is Elisabetta. This is She at Work. Goodbye.